Romans chapter 3 from verse 9. What then? Are we Jews any better off? No, not at all. For we have already charged that all, both Jews and Greeks, are under sin. As it is written, none is righteous, no, not one. No one understands, no one seeks for God. All have turned aside. Together they have become worthless. No one does good, not even one. Their throat is an open grave. They use their tongues to deceive. The venom of asps is under their lips. Their mouth is full of curses and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. In their paths are ruin and misery, and the way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be stopped, and the whole world may be held accountable to God. For by works of the law, no human being will be justified in his sight, since through the law comes knowledge of sin.
Let me pray. Teach us, O Lord, the way of your statutes, and we will keep it to the end. Give us understanding that we may keep your law and observe it with our whole heart. Lead us in the path of your commandments, for we delight in it. Amen. I want to begin by making an outrageous statement, an outrageous but true statement. There is nothing we can do at all to stop God being angry with us. There is nothing we can do at all to stop God being angry with us. No matter how good our lives, no matter how well we know our Bibles, no matter how zealous our Christian service is, or how sincere our spirituality, God is angry with us. God is right to be angry with us. In fact, turn it around, it would be wrong of God not to be angry with us. It would be wrong of God not to be angry with us. Well, that's my outrageous statement, but it's a true statement as far as the Bible's concerned. But we can't really throw out a statement like that you might be here and I don't know where our minds and our hearts are. So you might be thinking this yourself, or you might be thinking, well, there's someone at work I know, or my neighbour, who would find that statement personally very offensive. If there's no one who would take a statement like that as offensive, then I've probably not made it clear enough. It really ought to have come across as offensive to the world in which we live, to our neighbours and to our friends, and perhaps to our relatives. We can't throw a statement out that that's potentially offensive, though, without backing it up, without some sort of explanation, which is what I think verses 9 to 20 of Romans chapter 3 is. Why is God right to be angry with us? Because, first of all, we are slaves to our sin. That's verse 9. We are slaves to our sin. What then? Are we Jews any better off? No, not at all, for we have already charged that all, everybody, both Jews and Greeks, that is Jews and Gentiles, the whole then Roman world, are under sin. Everyone is under sin, slaves to our sin. What Paul is giving a summary is a summary here that basically saying that all the bad people, the kind of people who approve of the bad behaviour in chapter 1. Look back at chapter 1 and verses 18 to 32. There's all sorts of immoral, bad behaviour going on. And that ends with verse 32 saying that there are those who approve of such things. They're terrible. People even approve of these bad practices and this bad behaviour. What Paul is saying in verse 9 of chapter 2 is he's saying that those who approve of the bad behaviour there in chapter 1, referred to as perhaps Greeks or Gentiles in verse 9 that we're looking at, that we might call sinners, all the bad people, sinners, are under sin. But verse 9 says the Jews are too. So it's not just the Greeks, not just them, it's the Jews as well. That is, all the good people, the kind of people, chapter 1, verse 32, who would disapprove. They wouldn't approve of the bad behaviour in the rest of chapter 1. They would disapprove of it. In fact, chapter 2, verse 1 to 38, talk about them doing all sorts of good behaviour. In verse 1 of chapter 2, they do disapprove of bad behaviour. They judge it. And instead of doing bad behaviour, they get on and do all sorts of good behaviour, which is chapter 2, verse 1, right through chapter 3, verse 8. Those are people that we might call saints. According to verse 9, they too are under sin. So whether you're a sinner or a saint, in the way that we might think about them in the world, we are all under sin. All slaves to our sin. That's not popular. That's not a popular opinion at all. The popular view is summarised by one of my favourite poets, a guy called Steve Turner. He wrote a poem called The Creed. There's one line in it that goes like this. We believe, this is a kind of a comment on our culture, we believe that man is essentially good. It's only his behaviour that lets him down. This is the fault of society. Society is the fault of conditions. But the Bible says that we are not essentially good. The Bible says that we are essentially bad. We are under sin. Under sin. That is, trapped by sin. Trapped, caught by sin. Subject to sin's power. Sin is in authority over us. We are submitted to sin's influence over us and over our lives. Literally, we are slaves to sin. Slaves to sin. It's why, chapter 1, verse 18, we suppress the truth about God. Because we are slaves to sin. We are under sin. And it's why, chapter 1, verse 32, we approve of those who do wrong. It's because we're slaves to sin. Virtually, it's interesting really, because this might be hard, or we might find it insulting, or others we know may find it deeply offensive if we go around saying this, but virtually all the legislation that we have in Britain and in most countries, virtually all the legislation that there is in a country assumes that the Bible is right. It assumes that the Bible is right, that we are under sin. Promises are not enough. You would have thought that if we were generally good, a promise would be enough, wouldn't it? A promise is a promise. No, promises are not enough, so we have contracts. Speed limits are not enough, so we have speed cameras. Laws are not enough, so we have a police force. Marriage vows are not enough, so we have prenuptial agreements. Doors are not enough, so we have locks. It's very easy to prove, then, isn't it, that we're all under sin. That we're all trapped by sin. We are all slaves to sin. It's why we can't break patterns of selfish behaviour that, will creep into our marriages. Selfish behaviour creeps into every marriage in this room. Once it creeps in and it becomes a habitual thing, it's extremely difficult to break. It's because we're under sin. It's why we can't stop the greedy habit of wanting more and more and more, always wanting to update and get the next best thing. It's why we can't stop ourselves perhaps being engrossed with our own self-image. Bernard earlier on shared how extremely difficult it was. He realizes when he became a Christian that it was time to stop being always in control himself. I remember Bernard saying that to me on a number of occasions. And trying to trust God instead. But I stood here and said, it's extremely difficult. Why? Because of sin. We're under sin. It's why it's impossibly difficult to break destructive habits once they've started. The Bible's view is that we are not essentially good, but bad. It may sound offensive. It may hurt our pride. But as the mathematician Blaise Pascal said, the doctrine of original sin seems an offence to reason, but once accepted, makes total sense of the entire human condition. That's what you said. Once you accept it, it makes total sense of the entire human condition. We all experience, secondly, the symptoms of our sin. That's verses 10 to 18. So we're all under sin, verse 9. And then verse 10 to 18, the symptoms of our slavery. Paul there in those verses, he gives a string of quotations from the Old Testament. And each of them, or each little chunk of them, is a symptom of our sin. Our sin is being under, it's under our rebellion against God. And this is a list of our symptoms. And each of them we'll find ringing true in our own hearts. Okay? First of all, they all apply to us. So the first symptom of our slavery to sin is our rotten hearts. Everyone in the room has got a rotten heart. Verse 10 to 12. As it is written, none is righteous, no, not one. No one understands, no one seeks for God. All have turned aside, together they have become worthless. No one does good, not even one. We often think, don't we? We work on the assumption that the world's religions or the study of theology or philosophy, the Sunday evening programs on BBC Two about religion, all those things are a serious attempt to discover the truth about God. We work on the assumption there that our hearts are inclined towards God. And so we reach up to see if he's there. And if he is, what he's like. The Bible disagrees. Quite the opposite. Our hearts are spiritually rotten. The last thing we want to do as slaves to our sin, our rebellion against God, is go and find him. We don't want to do that. We don't want to reach up to him. And in fact, we would say the logic of this is that our religious endeavour is a very subtle and a very deceptive way of avoiding God. It's what Romans chapter 1 calls idolatry. Our rotten hearts. We don't want to know him. The first symptom of our sin is perhaps worse than not knowing God. We actually don't want to know him at all. The second symptom of our sin is our bitter tongues. That's verses 13 and 14. You'll notice that that each of these follow on. You've got a rotten heart, and then it leads to a bitter tongue. Their throat is an open grave. They use their tongue to deceive. The venom of asps is under their lips. Their mouth is full of curses and bitterness. All the resources of speech, you see what I said there, the throat, the tongue, the lips, the mouth, are used for self-centered purposes. The words we use to cut others down and so build ourselves up, the gossip that robs somebody else of their reputation. Bitter tongues. We know it to be true, don't we, in our own experience. We've been on the receiving end of a sharp tongue. And we've also at times, I guess, many times in our lives, been very good at delivering real bitterness in our tongue. And if we haven't been very good at it, I'm sure every one of us in the room has gone home and replayed the video or the DVD, whatever it is we have these days, and thought of all the things we could have said and wish we had in the moment when we thought, well, hang on, I could have really come out with that one and I missed it. And so the third symptom of our sin, again, to see the logic of it, the rebellious rebellion against God, it's the rotten heart, the bitter tongue, it leads to broken society in verses 15 to 18. Their feet are swift to shed blood, in their paths are ruin and misery, and the way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. No community can survive the consequences of the rotten heart and bitter tongue, the symptoms of our slavery to sin. So we might say, you know, verse 15 says, swift to shed blood. Well, I've never killed anyone. I don't go. But what about Jesus' application of the commandment not to murder? Matthew 5, Jesus says this, you've heard it was said of old, you shall not murder. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever says, "You fool," will be liable to the hell of fire. Ever thought, ever said, "I hate you"? Jesus says that's as bad as murder. It's deserving of the fire of hell. Very strong language. It's a symptom of a rotten heart, a demonstration in our experience that the Bible is right. The Bible is right. You and I are slaves to our sin. We have rotten hearts, bitter tongues, and we are vandals. We're vandals. We break community. We break each other down. We see that in our relationships. We see it internationally. We see it happening nationally. We see it in our own city. We see it in our neighbourhoods. We see it among our colleagues. We see it in our own families. And we see it in our own friendships. The Bible's right. I want to say the Bible, well, the Bible's wrong. Then I really want to be saying, well, find me another explanation for the problems that we, find me an explanation for your own heart. Let's begin there. Don't mind solving the world's problems. And just in case we thought we had a get out of jail free card, the third point is this, is in verses 19 to 20, escape from our slavery is impossible. Escape from our slavery to sin is impossible. Now, as we heard last week, some of Paul's original readers prided themselves on having God's law. Religion, its very, very best. They thought that obeying God's law was their kind of like, I've got my get out of jail free card and I'm ready to play it, in the game Monopoly. I've picked it up from the chance, and I've got it now in my stack. I've got all my property there, and right there next to all my money is my get out of jail free card. I've got the law and I'm obeying it and I'm ready to play it. That's what they thought. They thought they could get out of this slavery, out of this jail, out of this imprisonment to sin. But no, quite the opposite. What they had in their hands was a demonstration, not of a get-out-of-jail-free card, but a demonstration of how hard it was to get out of the jail. That's what the law did. Rather than helping us escape from slavery to sin, the law actually shows us and tells us how strong the chains are that tie us down. The law doesn't help us get free from the slavery of sin. The law actually tells us how seriously strong the door to the jail is. And it tells us how many bolts there are on it. And it tells us how many times the jailer's locked it. And it tells us how thick the walls are. It tells us we really are banged up. And that rings true with our experience. And so, over the next month, if we want to just test this out, just set ourselves a target. Set yourself a personal law to keep. Try getting up earlier each day to pray. Just for 7 days. All right? Just half an hour earlier. Or here's another one. Just 7 days not lying. All right, just try not to lie for 7 days, including the white lie. Okay, just try not lying for 7 days. Or maybe that, just trying to throw out some illustrations that perhaps we could latch onto. Try not to get angry with the person or the situation in recent weeks has regularly wound you up. We've all got someone in our lives like that. Many of us have got families, and so, we don't have to look that far. We've got a husband or a wife, so you don't have to look out the bedroom. Try not to get angry with that person or with the situation over this next week for 7 days. Or for Bernard, and he's already named himself, Bernard's your challenge this week is not to be a control freak, but to trust God who is in control rather than him. Bernard's just already said that, I find it really hard. You'll find verse 20 is right. The law guarantees that instead of finding we're a better person, that we're more aware that we're not a good person. Through the law comes knowledge of sin. For by works of the law, trying to obey the law, no human being will be justified, that is, put right with God in God's sight, since through the law comes knowledge of sin. You will just be aware of how thick the walls are to the imprisonment to sin and how strong the jailer is. We can try doing that for this week personally. In the world around us, we see, we hear, and we support all sorts of attempts to solve the world's problems. And many of them are absolutely right, and they are admirable. And so green technologies, strategies for peace, political solutions, improved education, social justice. These are important things, and we should work for them. But we've got to work for them with very honest hearts. We must accept that all they do is treat the symptoms of our sin that are summed up in verses 10 to 18. They just treat the symptoms. They don't go to the heart of the problem, which is verse 9, our slavery to our sin. If I can put it this way, these attempts to put the world right, they are like a prison inmate wrangling and working his way and conniving and using all his, scheming naughtiness that he's learned that's ended him up in being in prison to get more time in the exercise yard each day and an improved diet by, having a bit of a friendship with the guys that serve the food out. And yes, perhaps getting on to some education course as well that he can do and perhaps get to an A-level or a GCSE or learn a trade. And maybe, perhaps if he's real lucky, get a TV in his own cell. And then sitting back and thinking, well, that's sorted my problem. As it heck, he's still banged up. That would be stupid, wouldn't it, to improve the environment of the prison. That's all that's happened. We can work in all these ways, spiritually, religiously, social justice, and all we're doing is improving the environment of the prison we're in, our slavery to our sin, and its rule and its authority over our lives. Escape from our slavery is impossible. The situation of every one of us is the same. And I think if I can put it this way, is like the alcoholic. Here's the first step of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Have you ever read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous? Here's the first. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. And we might say we admitted we were powerless over sin. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. That's what we've been talking about here. Everything I said, I guarantee, I know it rings true with your heart and your life. Your life is unmanageable. You can't, I can't. We can't manage these problems. We try, it'll just prove we can't. And that's verse 19, isn't it? Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be stopped and the whole world may be held accountable to God. There we go. There's nothing we can do. Like the person enslaved to alcohol, all we can do is take the next two steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, or somewhat similar. Number two, we came to believe a power, capital P, greater than ourselves, could restore us to sanity. So, there's nothing I can do. That's step one. I'm completely powerless. Step two, I'm totally dependent upon power, capital P, to sort this out, if it's going to be sorted out. And then third step of Alcoholics Anonymous, we made the decision to turn our will and our lives to the care of God. And it still says that. To the care of God. Escape from our slavery to sin is impossible. We are utterly dependent upon God for rescue. And that's where Romans chapter 1, verse 18, to chapter 3, verse 20, but the whole chunk, that's where it's been heading to. So the summary of verse 19, shut up. You've got nothing else to say. You've got no other argument. You're under sin. You're enslaved to sin. Escape from our sin, our slavery is impossible. We are utterly dependent upon God for rescue. And that's why the first word of verse 21 is one of the most wonderful words in the whole book of Romans. What is the first word of verse 21? But unless we understand where this has got to, we won't understand or know how good that but is. Tonight we must understand that we have no way of escape. And we've got to admit that. We've got to be humbled by it. So for today, the second half of verse 19, I think, makes for a very good definition of a Christian. It is a very good definition of the start of the Christian life. I think it's a very good definition of the start to the Christian every day and every week and every month and every year. Someone who has admitted that he or she is accountable to God and that they have nothing to say in their defense. They are enslaved to sin and utterly dependent upon the mercy of God. A Christian is someone who has stopped arguing with God, quit talking, and shut up. And so tonight we're not going to sing a hymn now. We're going to spend a few moments in quiet, and in 5 minutes or so, Jeff can text the youth to say we finished, but we're going to end with a few minutes. Shut up. To pray. To say, I've stopped arguing. So let's keep our Bibles open, shall we? Let's cast our eye through these words again. And let me end by reading verse 19 again. Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be stopped and the whole world may be held accountable to God.